for this month's rent. So he comes to me and I lend him some money, but I don't have $1,000 to help him pay the rent, and I didn't think that was a good idea anyway. So all I could do was offer him a shoulder to cry on. I felt his pain, but he went home not knowing what he was going to do. The next morning, way too early, he called me and said, "Guess what? I got a phone call. You remember that uncle I told you about in South Carolina that I didn't even know about? I just got a message from the people that were reading the will, and I got a gift of $10,000 from my uncle that I didn't even know. I can pay the rent. I'm saved from being evicted and homeless." A miracle. A real miracle. And then, remember that story. Jesus and his friends had gotten into a boat to cross the Sea of Galilee, and they were going across the river, the lake. It's a small little lake, and everything was fine. It was a sunny day, but then all of a sudden, a big storm blew in. Waves were crashing, the wind was blowing, the boat was filling up, and the disciples were bailing as fast as they could. And they were terrified. They just knew they were going to drown. They were in the middle of the lake. What were they going to do? And Jesus, of course, was sleeping. And they woke him up and they said, "Jesus, Jesus, we're going to drown. We're going to drown." And he looked up and he raised his hand and said, "Don't be afraid." And the sirens came and the wind stopped. The waves calmed and he said, "Your faith has brought the end of the storm." And they paddled on to the other side on a calm lake. A miracle, a genuine miracle. So a couple of you asked the question, why don't those big miracles like calming the storm keep happening? He said, we don't ever hear about these miraculous healings or dictators being brought down by the power of God anymore. But you know, I get raising the question, what is a miracle? I mean, if miracles don't happen anymore, we need to decide on the definition. So, a good English teacher that I am, I got out my big old Webster's dictionary. I didn't even go to dictionary.com. I got the real paper one. And I looked it up, and this is what it says. A miracle is a surprising and welcome event, surprising and welcome, that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws, and is therefore often considered to be the work of a divine agency. Well, okay, but that still leaves me a lot of questions. How do we know that something is inexplicable by science or nature? Maybe we just don't understand it. Maybe when Jesus raised his hand, a cold front was coming through at just that moment, and the storm cleared. I've seen storms clear that fast. And maybe that miracle check that my friend got in the mail, yeah, it was a really weird circumstance, but it was just a happy coincidence. Were either of those miracles really, were they inexplicable? And divine agency? Well, if you've studied Presbyterian theology, we Presbyterians believe that divine agency is in every aspect of our lives. We believe in the providence of God in every little piece of our lives. And so, if we really want to think about it, everything that happens in our lives is a miracle because God is in divine agency is in everything.
Okay, I kind of agree with you, but you go a little bit too far. Because, you know, you go to the Webster's, I go to the Bible. And it's clear to me in the Old Testament, there's full of stories where God is portrayed as active in human history, intimately involved in the power of God. In ordinary ways, God is there. And it's interesting, the Old Testament doesn't use the word miracle, if at all. It's God's intervention in history, and that is pretty amazing and good news. I mean, that God created the world and commands the forces of nature. You see God a lot getting people's attention. I'm going to burn a bush. There we go. Start paying attention to me. Or people aren't following, and miracles, interventions come to get people on the right path again. I mean, it's sometimes words of comfort and challenge, and it comes when it has to demonstrate the mighty power of God. You know, those prophets, I'll wipe out all those Baal people, and look, you get through. I like the idea of God's power in creation. I mean, when I go into Muir Woods, I feel God's presence there. It just calms me down that the God who created the forces of nature also created me.
I agree with that, but I'm still a little unsure about what a miracle is. I saw a movie a long time ago. I don't even remember the name of the movie. It was a murder mystery, and somebody had gotten killed and wasn't really killed. But one of the characters in the movie said, it's a miracle. And the other character said, no, it's not. And then he said, a miracle is what needs to happen actually happening. Listen to that again. A miracle is what needs to happen actually happening. And that has always stuck with me. That opens the door a lot to lots of miracles. If something that needs to happen happens, that's a miracle. And you know, that's what Jesus did. Jesus went around looking for what needed to happen to people, and he helped it happen. It wasn't just a big, flashy event. Jesus met people's needs.
Okay, and again, I want to agree with you, and I do, but I went to look at John Calvin. John Calvin is actually the founder of the Presbyterian tradition, and he was in the time 500 years ago when the Catholic Church was kind of selling miracles. If you had enough money, you could buy yourself out of, basically out of hell. And so he really thought that the power for poof, you're healed, ended with the apostles. And this is what he would say. Those miraculous powers and manifest workings, which were dispensed by like the laying on of hands, have ceased. And they have rightly lasted just for a time. So he would say, in the days of disciples, rightly just for that time. But he would also say that there's tokens of God's goodness and proofs of wisdom in this universe, things great and small. So he would say that those kind of miraculous healings for him had ceased, but God is involved in the big and the small. And that's the extraordinary proof of God's power. And you know, things happen that I don't understand. I mean, I also, as a pastor, say I cannot explain everything. People have come to me and say, this has happened, and I'm better. And I have to say, praise be to God. I can't figure all this stuff out. So things happen that my rational mind and John Calvin don't know about.
And we raised about 50 other questions that need to be discussed. The biggest one is, why do some people get miracles and the others don't? But hey, our time is running out, and that's the next sermon.
No, wait. I still have 1.5 seconds.
Go.
What I talked about, how my praying has changed when I'm in the hospital with people. There used to be a time when I was a young pastor that I would say, may God just heal that and take care of that. And now I'm wider. I go in a hospital, I will pray for the healing of the person, that the doctors and the nurses and the caregivers do their very best work, that God's will be done. I've also been known to pray for hospital food that is tolerable enough to eat, but that I pray that God's ways be in that person's life and that they have wholeness. I've learned to let God work through all those ways in a prayer when I pray for some. And I always will pray with people.
And those are miracles.
Shoot, I agreed with you again. Yeah, right, okay.
On this one, we didn't have too much disagreement, but.
We're 50 seconds ahead.
Oh, well, that gives us time to talk about the other one, which is a bigger issue.
Oh, my Lord, okay.
There was another issue that was on a lot of our minds. We had 5 questions come in about this one. Several people wanted to know what to do about the big divide in our society that I was talking about. It is a really difficult question. How do we be Christian with people who, with whom we so vehemently disagree? They claim to be Christian, I claim to be Christian, and we're like on opposite poles. How can that happen? And people wanted to know, how can people who claim to be Christian speak such hatred and racist comments that we hear all over the place? And how can we, as several people do, said in their questions, how can we harbor thoughts of harming them ourselves? One person even asked how Christian people can, as this person put it, put up with the Trumpsters.
Okay, Irwin, we had come to a decision we weren't going to mention the president's name in the sermon.
Well, lots of people
did. I know they did, but it seems to me that we have to realize in our church, where we live in kind of a bubble of San Francisco, thinking everyone thinks alike, that people in this church come on variety of sides. And I know it's just not one way. And I think we've really got to be respectful of somehow if people on both sides of this equation that are passionate about it. And the question for me is, how do we learn to be civil about this? And I think sometimes we rant a little bit because we think we're the only people, we think we're right.
I'm a foot.
Yeah, and I'm a hand. We've gone through this. Which one's more important?
Well, we think we have these awful divisions in society, and we do, that's for sure. But I'm here to tell you, in Jesus' time, it was even worse, I promise you. The letter I read from Corinthians I told you about, they were ready to kill each other. And Paul says, learn to live in one body. But in Jesus' time, think about it. The Romans occupied the territory. So there's the Romans who are telling everybody what to do, and the Jews and the others who don't want to have this occupying army. And then there's in the middle these religious zealots, the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the lawyers and all those people who are trying to figure out how to be religious but not make the Romans too mad. So it's like, I got to make the Romans happy and I got to keep the Jewish people happy. And so what they did is they ended up making all these rules that the Romans wanted, and that made life burdensome for everybody. And Jesus comes along and he just blows up the whole thing. Jesus was a threat to the Pharisees, and so they were always trying to get Jesus some way. They were trying to trap him. They wanted to get him to find some way to make him look bad so that they could just discount him. Well, what they did over and over again was they invited him to dinner. That's a weird way to try to get somebody. But their plan was they'd get him at the dinner table with lots of reporters standing around, and they'd ask him some embarrassing question that he would answer in an embarrassing way, and then they could just say, see, he's not from God. Well, Jesus messed that up. He outsmarted them. First, he always accepted their invitations. If you look in Luke, there's like six times when this happens. The Pharisees invite him, and he goes to dinner. He sits down at table with them. Actually, they lay at table back then. It was kind of nice. They lay down on the floor and had all the food in the middle. And he shares a meal with them. They're having food. They're drinking wine. Everything's going fine. But then something always happens. Do you remember the one time? In walks, past the guards at the door, this prostitute. She's sleazy looking, she's in hot pants. She's not looking really smart, her makeup's rather messed up, and she pulls the pins out of her hair and lets the hair down and starts rubbing Jesus with her hair. Well, this was too much for the Pharisees. They start screaming and yelling, how can you let this woman do this? Get this piece of trash out of here. And
Irwin, I think it was hard for the disciples too. Oh. There's a uniting, we didn't talk about that, but I don't think they liked this anymore.
Oh, no, everybody disliked it. But Jesus was welcoming of her. And Jesus tells a story. And in that story, he says, who needs God's love more? The people who are hurting and the people who are sinful, or the people who are good looking at the Pharisees, and they had to admit that the woman needed God's more love more. And then another time, a very similar kind of time, he goes to sits down to dinner, but he doesn't wash his hands in the proper spiritual way, in the miracle of cleansing. And they start ragging on him for not following the rules and not being a good Jew. And he looks at them and he says, well, you may be clean on the outside, but on the inside, you're disgusting. Well, what does that mean for you and I? What do we do? Well, when we disagree with somebody, first thing we do is we sit down to a meal together with them. How many times have you done that lately? And you respect them, and you listen to them. But that doesn't mean we have to put up with all the junk they say. When they're starting to be exclusive and hateful, we can call them on it, and we can expect them to do the same to us. But we should only do this when we're sitting at a table with them. We're in close eye-to-eye fellowship. Don't do it on a soapbox on the street, and please do not do it on Facebook. That will not work. Intimacy and respect are really important when we disagree.
And I wonder, Erwin, if it's also when we're hearing people we don't agree with. We have to remember that we sit at a table like this. That yes. God's table, this communion table, is always also open to all. That there's a deeper table, but that wasn't in our...
Yeah, yes. And you said one of the things we definitely need to do, that show that intimacy, respect, but also listen.
Yeah. Especially when I look at how do people deal with disagreements, clearly in all the Presbyterian stuff, they say you have to listen to each other. And you have to respect the other to show some of that that care and at least admit that they have a desire to follow in the ways of Jesus or in the ways of peace. It's how do you be civil, which is more than tolerating. But in my research, I found that there was a movement within the Presbyterian Church and other churches to ask the House, you know, the House to...
Congress.
House of... What, Congress?
Congress.
Thank you. To be civil to each other. There were like three rules that we will listen without speaking. We will not say disparaging things to each other. And I think the other was just that we'll be kind. Guess how many people were able to sign it? Three, and they stopped it. You know what year this was? 2012. So we've had these issues with each other for a while to even get those folks to sit down and agree. But I do find the power if we sit down and be with each other, we may learn some. I saw an exhibit at MoMA called Circle and Square by a woman named Suzanne Lacey. Was just amazing. It was all photography, and she went into England to a mill town that was devastated when the mills closed, and she interviewed English white folks and the Pakistanis who had come into the mills a little bit later, and everyone had lost their job in that community. Everyone had been devastated, and the older folks kind of wanted to blame the Pakistanis, and the Pakistanis said, you know, no one is kind to us. And so this artist decided she was going to get a group together for 3 days. And they were all going to meet in this closed out mill. And what she did is she got two singing groups, shape note singing, which sings in a square, and a Sufi kind of Muslim chanting that sings in a circle. And she had them meet each other. And for a day, they were at each other's practices. The Sufis in the circle and the shape note singers in a square, and they were strangely, their tones sounded the same, and they were passionate, and they learned to sing with each other. It was lovely to see the Sufi guys in hats that were kind of look pointy, hugging grandmother-type English mums. And they sat down after that and had a meal together, 150 people. And by that time, they said, I never knew you before. And that they said, I have some hope on how we can go forward because they sang together, because they knew each other, that they learned their traditions. That's where their hope was, where they did these things in common. And I talked a little bit about Edith Cavell. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. I learned about her in... up in World War One. I wasn't alive then, but I went to Alaska and saw the Edith Cavell Glacier. And she was this nurse during World War One. She was Anglican Episcopalian, and she lived in an area, I think it was in, I can't remember. See, this is where my fatigue is coming up in Belgium. And she did this amazing thing. She served and gave medical care to British and to German soldiers. If anyone was in need, she actually gave them physical care. But at the same time, she helped 200 English and Belgian soldiers escape from German-occupied Belgium. 200, she got out on her own, and she was put in a POW camp. And while she was in that POW camp and people said, try to get away, she said, I can't stop while there are lives still to be saved. And she was actually executed, this nurse, this woman of faith, that she wouldn't leave when it was safe for her to go because there were people to be saved.
Amazing story. And Maggie and I came up with dozens. We've got a whole bunch more stories if you want to talk us to us at happy hour. The sermon's over, we're happy. At coffee hour, we can tell you some of the other stories that we heard. But we realized it is possible to disagree and to care about each other. But like Jesus, we don't have to necessarily agree with the ideas, but we need to love the person.
And Edith Cavell, right before she was executed, she had a German Lutheran pastor that ministered to her, said, patriotism, say that word, I've had some trouble.
Patriotism.
With. Patriotism is not enough. I must have no hatred or bitterness towards anyone. I must have no hatred or bitterness towards anyone, and then she was executed. And that's what's in the UK at Trafalgar Square on her statue, that's the quote. To me, that says there is something greater than our hate. And she was the witness to that for me. I have Amen. To hold on to something more than just disagreeing.
Amen.
And we give thanks to a God that says, I love all of you, and you will find a way, and can we be some hope in this world? That's what we hope.
Even if you are a hand person and I'm a foot person.
Yeah. Thanks be to God. Amen.